A lot of times with neuropathy, people have a little numbness, tingling in their toes or feet, and it's something that they've had for years, and maybe it's getting slightly worse over the years. That's a very different clinical picture than if they were perfect a week ago and things are significantly worsening to the point that their balance is off or they're noticing weakness. And so if you're getting enough nerve damage that there is weakness, that's certainly something that you want to have immediate attention for. It is worth getting checked out because while the vast majority of the neuromuscular conditions are slowly progressive, there certainly are some that are more concerning and can progress fast.
Dr. Kitai, thank you so much for taking your time out of your busy day. I know you're a busy man. We're good friends. Thank you for taking your time to come talk with us. To those listening, this is Dr. Kitai. We're going to talk about EMG. We're going to talk about neuropathy. What I want to do is I want to talk, get your expertise for the patient first. And then after that, we talk about, I have a lot of people who listen because they're taking their boards or they're interested in EMG. And so we'll end the conversation with a little bit more clinical, if you don't mind. But before we get started, I want to hear, you know, tell a little bit about, you know, who you are and how you got to where you are today.
Well, that sounds like a great plan. And Gil, yeah, I want to thank you for doing this. Obviously, you're well-respected in the neurology community. And for you to take the time after your experience to focus on teaching like this is really great. So I appreciate you doing that. As far as my history, I went to medical school where I grew up in Arizona, did my residency at the University of Connecticut, and then my neuromuscular fellowship at Harvard, and then moved out here about 15 years ago. And I'm a partner at Rocky Mountain Neurology.
Awesome. So I've got Duke, I've got Harvard, I've got Yale, and I think we've got some pretty good guests on. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Well, let's dive into it. So let's talk about first the peripheral nervous system and the diagnosis. So how do doctors differentiate central versus peripheral nervous system problems? What do you do to designate that, to differentiate that?
Yeah, so good question. And it is really important to make a differentiation between those, because when we're talking about the central nervous system, we're talking about the brain and spinal cord. And then the peripheral nervous system is from where the nerve roots come out, go into our arms, into our legs, and all the way into the muscles. Mm-hmm. And so when a patient comes in with various complaints, whether they're sensory, motor, trouble with balance, we want to first identify where's the major area that we're looking. And we can do that partly by the history and physical exam, because the distribution of the symptoms will sometimes let us know what's going on. For example, if there's a problem in the brain, like a stroke, we can often have a whole side of the body affected. It would be the opposite side. And if we have weakness in the face, arm, and leg, that points more towards a central cause. Whereas if we have a peripheral cause, like a pinched nerve in the neck or somewhere out in the arm, then we'd expect weakness or sensory symptoms in the distribution of that nerve. So, you know, part of it is the exam and the physical, and then there's also other things from the exam that we can find when we have an upper motor neuron problem. Again, the brain and spinal cord problems, especially if they're chronic, we will have increased reflexes and spasticity. If you've seen a patient who had a stroke, say a year ago, oftentimes they're held in a stiff posture because we get spasticity and stiffening there, whereas peripheral nerve problems, we have decreased reflexes and the findings are more flaccid. So there's certain things from the exam can help us to clue us in as well.
Yeah. So what are some of the patients, you know, let's say they just tuned in and they're wondering, you know, what's going on with them? Are these carpal tunnel patients that you deal with? Are these, you know, patients experiencing dizziness or anything like that? Who are you seeing?
Yeah, so there's, you know, a lot of different symptoms that we can get with peripheral nerve disease, and some of the more common diagnoses. If we have a pinched nerve in the neck or the low back, we can have pain, weakness, sensory changes. If we have peripheral nerve problems, similarly, we can have weakness or sensory changes. If there's neuropathy, especially something that's affecting the nerves furthest out, we call it peripheral neuropathy. They could just have some numbness, tingling in their toes or feet. And so those are the more common things that we'll see. There's a nerve called the median nerve. It travels under some connective tissue at the wrist called the carpal tunnel. So when it gets irritated there, we call it carpal tunnel syndrome. That can cause some numbness, tingling, or even weakness more in the distribution inflammation of the thumb side of the hand. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the more common things.
Yeah. So if a patient is experiencing pain or numbness while they're typing, for instance, they're coming to see you.
That would be one of the more common things that we see. Yeah. Especially if it is in just one arm, one distribution, it certainly could be a pinched nerve in the arm, at the wrist or the elbow or up in the neck. And so, yeah, we try to tease that out both with the physical exam and with the help of the EMG.
Yeah. And when you say pinched nerve, now is this because there is some type of obstruction that's pushing on these nerves? What's causing this pain? What's causing this numbness?
That's a good question because there's multiple potential causes. So a radiculopathy, which can happen in the neck or the low back, the brain sends information down the spinal cord and then the nerve roots come out, and those nerve roots can get irritated either by the discs in between the vertebrae. They're kind of like a hard jelly material, so they can push out into what's called the foramen where the nerve root travels out. Mm-hmm. And also as we get older and we get some arthritis and degeneration there, the hole gets smaller just by bony fragments that can push on that nerve root. And then that can cause either weakness, pain, sensory symptoms going out into the arms or the legs.
Yeah. Now, is it physical things that cause this, or could, you know, alcoholism seems to cause all kinds of issues. What are the things that are actually causing this that might not be physical manifestations or manifest from physical activity?
So that's a good question, because there are a lot of things in the peripheral nervous system where we have direct pressure on the nerves, like in the neck or the low back, or like carpal tunnel or pinched nerves at the elbow. But there are also more diffuse causes of symptoms, like neuropathy. That's a degeneration of the little nerve fibers on the skin. That can happen a little more than half the time. It just happens on its own. We never find a specific cause. But when we do find causes, the most common thing that we find is a problem with sugar metabolism, either borderline or high blood sugars, like we could see in diabetes, some vitamin deficiencies like B12. There are some medicines like the chemotherapy medicines that can cause or worsen neuropathy, and some lifestyle things. Alcohol, if used in excess, can certainly cause or worsen neuropathy. It's one of the more common causes.
Yeah. My funny story, my sister, when she was pregnant, she developed neuropathy, basically couldn't feel her hands. Mm. What's going on there? Is that something? Is that common?
Well, it is actually pretty common, and mm-hmm. there's certainly a broad range of things it could be, but the most common is because we have swelling, edema, and the potential for pressure on nerves, we see carpal tunnel syndromes a lot more commonly in pregnancy because the nerve doesn't have a lot of room to travel there at the wrist, and if we've got swelling, extra weight, extra fluid, then we can get some extra pressure there to give that'll give some symptoms. And a lot of times after women give birth and the body gets back to its normal state, a lot of those symptoms will improve.
Yeah. And we'll get into some of the testing that you can see, you know, how far gone, I guess, your carpal tunnel could be. But let me ask you this. With patients who are experiencing this numbness, is this something that goes away on its own? Is this something that always, if you experience a numbness, if you experience a pain, you have to have some type of medications? We'll get into what medications, if so. Or, you know, does every patient experience symptoms so bad that eventually they'll have to have surgery? Does it go away on its own, I guess, is the best way to
It definitely can. And so that's part of the reasons it's important to not only identify where the problem's coming from and have the correct diagnosis, but also to see how severe things are. And the EMG helps a lot with that. For example, with carpal tunnel syndrome, we can identify on our physical exam and the history that, yeah, we think that that's what it is, but the EMG lets us know the severity. So if we see that it's mild, oftentimes we'll try more conservative methods protecting the nerves so we don't lean on them, maybe getting a jelly pad if you're doing a lot of typing, wearing a wrist brace at night. And a lot of times things will improve with those modalities and physical therapy. On the other hand, if things are more in the moderate to severe stage, then we know there is ongoing nerve damage. And that's generally when we want to discuss surgical options, going in and loosening up the tissue there to give the nerve some room to breathe. Because we know if there is ongoing nerve damage, the longer we let that go on, the more there is a risk of permanent nerve damage, weakness in the hand. And so that is a good example of where the EMG can be helpful, not only to confirm the diagnosis, but also to assess the severity so we know what to do about it.
Yeah. So if it's too far gone, you're not going to risk it getting worse. You're going to try to get ahead of that and stop it.
That's a really good point, because a lot of people, they think carpal tunnel is benign, which in a lot of cases it is. But if it is more moderate to severe and there's ongoing nerve damage, the biggest biggest mistake a patient can make is just ignoring it for a year or two. And then they come in and, well, now I have weakness. Then they have surgery and they only have a little bit of improvement, or they may not get back to baseline, mm-hmm. partly because they let it go on so long. So, it is worth addressing, even if that is just deciding, okay, we're going to try some conservative modalities, give it 6 months and see if we improve, or talk about surgical options.
Yeah. Okay. So a patient, before they actually have the EMG, and we'll get into what an EMG and NCV actually is, but before they get there, are there any questions that a patient should ask their neurologist before they do the study?
Well, it's a good question. And obviously a good neurologist is going to go through the history, a detailed exam, and talk about treatment options. But I would say one thing that's always really important to add in that sometimes falls through the cracks is lifestyle modifications. We know with neuropathies, when we find a cause, the most common cause is a problem with borderline or high blood sugars. So talking about diet modifications can be really important. Also vitamin deficiencies like B12. And then a very common cause of neuropathy is alcohol use. So yeah. I would say it's just always important to talk about the lifestyle stuff in addition to everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And what are some of the red flags that need urgent attention?
Yeah, that's really important with neuromuscular disease, because a lot of the things that we deal with progress very slowly. Most of them are like the small fiber neuropathies that just cause some pain and tingling in the toes or feet and maybe a little burning. Those generally progress very slow, and patients often don't even notice changes over a matter of years. But there are some neuropathies like Guillain-Barré syndrome, the one that affects the outer part of the nerve, the myelin. Those can progress fast and be potentially dangerous. So if someone says, hey, I was perfect a week ago and I've just been worsening, and now it's to the point where my balance is off and I'm starting to get weak. Yeah. Obviously, that's a much different clinical picture. And so that needs much more urgent attention. And the other major thing that patients need to watch out for is any difficulty breathing. It is really rare, but with neuromuscular conditions like Guillain-Barré, the neuropathy that progresses fast, or like myasthenia gravis, which is a problem with the connection between the nerves and the muscles, they can progress to the point where they affect our respiratory muscles. And that is the potentially dangerous part, because there are treatments that we can get people going in the right direction. But if they ignore those symptoms, or they just say, well, I'll sleep it off, then that can be a potentially bad outcome. So anytime there's a neuromuscular condition and people have any trouble breathing, that's something they want to be seen urgently for.
Yeah, absolutely. If a patient's experiencing numbness, when do they know they should come to you? Because I think you raise a good point. It's like, when is at the first sight of pain, at the first sight of numbness, or, what's that's Goldilocks zone where they they don't intervene medically, but you don't want to go too far past, if that makes sense.
It's a good question, but there's also, because there's such a broad range of different diagnoses, I would say some potential red flags or things that hey, we should be seeing pretty soon is if there's a rapid progression. If things are worsening quickly, then that is something that you want to be seen for. A lot of times, say with neuropathy, for example, people have a little numbness, tingling in their toes or feet, and it's something that they've had for years, and maybe it's getting slightly worse over the years. That's a very different clinical picture than if they were perfect a week ago and things are significantly worsening to the point that their balance is off or they're noticing weakness. And so weakness is certainly a big one, whether we're talking about radiculopathies, the pinched nerves in the neck or the low back. If you're getting enough nerve damage that there is weakness, that's certainly something that you want to have immediate attention for. But also, if there's any kind of rapid progression in the balance or even sensory changes, it is worth getting checked out, because while the vast majority of the neuromuscular conditions are slowly progressive, there certainly are some that are more concerning and can progress fast. And the last thing I'll mention on that is if things ever get to the point where people are having trouble breathing, mm-hmm. which can happen in some neuromuscular conditions, absolutely want to be seen in the ER. That's not the kind of thing you want to ignore or sleep off. But in general, talking to the primary care doc and going over things with them, they can absolutely give guidance on if it's the kind of thing that it's worth seeing a neurologist for, or if any testing is needed. But if there is a rapid progression, or if there's anything concerning, significant weakness or trouble breathing, I would make sure people are seen very quickly.
So persistence and progression is probably a good way to think of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So from what I know, And, you know, epilepsy is kind of my specialty. But from what I know, neuropathy is just kind of a catch-all term for something's going on with the nerves. Is that correct?
That actually is really true. Neuropathy is used in a lot of different ways. And essentially, we just mean a problem with the nerves. Now, if it's the nerves furthest out, we call it a peripheral neuropathy. Those are the most common. But some people will even use the word neuropathy if they're talking about a specific individual nerve that's getting pushed on. But in general, when we talk about neuropathy, we're talking about peripheral neuropathies with the classic symptoms starting with numbness, tingling, or some discomfort in the toes or feet. But there are some neuropathies that present with weakness and balance difficulty and are faster in progression, like Guillain-Barré syndrome is one that progresses a lot faster than your normal types of neuropathies, can cause weakness and is potentially concerning. But yes, you're right. Neuropathy is kind of a general term that means problem with the nerves, and then we refine it from there. There are a couple major parts of the nerves that are affected in neuropathy. And so the inner part of the nerve, what's called the axon, that's what brings the information. Mm. Most neuropathies, especially those peripheral neuropathies, affect the axon, and those are generally slower in progression. Most of the time, they don't cause much in the way of impairment, but they can cause some numbness, tingling, symptoms like that in the feet, sometimes some discomfort or what's called allodynia, meaning sensory stimuli that normally wouldn't be painful or felt as painful, like the sheets touching your sheet and symptoms like that. And then the other major category of neuropathies affect the outer part of the nerve, what's called the myelin. That's what helps to bring the information faster. So that's neuropathies like Guillain-Barré syndrome. And those neuropathies tend to progress faster and are more potentially concerning. Those are the ones that can have a rapid progression where people lose their balance quickly or have weakness. And those are the ones that need more of a rapid evaluation. And there are some neuropathies that just affect the sensory fibers. You know, the nerves, they bring sensory information from the skin up to the brain. And then the brain, when it tells the muscles what to do, there are parts of the motor nerves that tell the muscles what to do. And so differentiating between sensory and motor or between the axon and the demyelinating, those are really important things to do. And that's where the EMG can be really helpful.
Mm, awesome. So speaking of nerves, like, are all nerves the same? Are there larger fibers? Are there smaller fibers? What does that look like?
So it's a great question. No, there are certainly a lot of different nerves and different functions. So the small nerve fibers and what are affected in a small fiber neuropathy, they bring in sensory input about pain and temperature. And so those are the ones where often we'll have just a little burning, tingling type symptoms in the feet, but not much in the way of other symptoms. The larger sensory fibers bring us information about vibration and proprioception. Proprioception is knowing where our body is in space. So when that's affected, it can really start to throw off the balance. So we can differentiate partly based on the exam, and then the EMG and nerve conduction studies can confirm what types of fibers we're dealing with because they do have potentially different treatments.
Are there any neuropathies that affect the motor function?
Yes, there are motor neuron diseases. The most common that people have heard of is ALS, or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and that does affect the motor portion of the nerve. So with those, we generally are not going to have sensory symptoms, but people will come in and have weakness and atrophy and fasciculations. And those obviously have a very different time course and progression and what we would expect. So yeah, definitely a broad range of neuropathies and different types and important to narrow down what are we dealing with the EMG and nerve conduction studies.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of EMG and nerve conduction studies, you know, a lot of my viewers, they are students, they are trying to either pass the EMG boards or their EEG, registered EEG, and their department is opening an EMG clinic or whatever. And they're trying to figure out a little bit more, trying to learn a little bit more. Some people might want to sharp their skill. Mm-hmm. I want to add value to what is an EMG, that basic, and then go to, hey, here's some good tips for these students, okay? Yeah. So let's talk about what an EMG is. Maybe they're starting from ground zero. What is an EMG?
No, that's a great question. And also for patients, I think it's important they know before they're going in. So there's two parts to the EMG. The nerve conduction studies is where we send impulses down the nerves to see how fast and how strong they're bringing the information. So we'll record from one spot and send a stimulus from another spot and see how the nerves are functioning, how fast and how strong they bring that impulse, and checking different nerves to diagnose where the problem is.
And what does that look like? Sorry for interrupting, but I want to kind of paint a picture. Mm-hmm. So from my experience, they put electrodes on the hand and then they stimulate certain parts of the arm. Now, are they stimulating the whole arm all at once, or is there, do they need to move around in the arm? And then what does that shock feel like?
So yes, there's certainly moving around, and an experienced EMGer is going to know exactly where to stimulate. It makes it a lot less comfortable. In general, it feels like if you walk on carpet and touch a doorknob, get a little zap. But mm-hmm. if you're where you're supposed to be, then the zap is pretty small. You know, it's a common misperception, especially for patients, or if they look online, they'll see, oh, wow, this, you know, super uncomfortable. And it's where usually the anticipation is the worst part, because if you go to someone who knows what they're doing, you know, and they are where they need to be, the stimulation is pretty light in general. But yes, we're recording from a specific spot, either over a muscle, or we can be checking sensory nerves and recording on a spot over the skin and then stimulating from a different spot. We measure the distance, and then the computer will give us a waveform so we can see, based on the amplitude of the wave, how strong the nerve is bringing that impulse, and also how fast.
Yeah. And I think we need to clarify, and I'm sorry for not doing that in the beginning. We're talking about NCVs, nerve conduction.
Yes.
And then EMGs are different, I guess.
So the EMG portion is the needle examination or electromyography. That part, we have a little acupuncture size electrode and listen to the muscle activity from inside some of the muscles. Because we know the distribution of which nerve roots in the neck for the arm or in the low back for the leg supply which muscles, by listening to those muscles, and if we see something abnormal, we trace it back almost like tree branches to determine where the problem is. So it is kind of like figuring out a puzzle, which EMGers like myself, that's kind of what we enjoy about it, because just to give you, you know, an example, if you're interested, if someone has, say, weakness here in the hand, if you listen to that muscle and it's abnormal, then we know, okay, there is not, you know, a certain nerve root in the neck. If talking about the abductor pollicis brevis, it's the C8 and T1 nerve roots that supply that muscle, but it's also the median nerve that mm-hmm. supplies that muscle. So all we know at this point is it's one of those two problems. So what we can then do is check a different muscle that's supplied by the C8, T1 nerve root, but not by the median nerve, by the ulnar nerve. Mm-hmm. And if that's abnormal, then it suggests, okay, we may be talking about something in the neck at the C8, T1 level, and then check another muscle that's supplied by the median nerve, like the pronator teres that's supplied by the C6, 7 roots. And if that's normal, then it gives us even more confirmation that we're not dealing with a median nerve problem, we're dealing with a problem in the neck. And so by knowing what nerve roots supply what muscles and what peripheral nerves supply what muscles, we can trace back to where the problem is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other major part of the EMG, because there's two components of that. Number one, we listen to the muscles at rest. We shouldn't hear anything. If we hear abnormal spontaneous activity, it lets us know that there's some ongoing muscle membrane breakdown there. And then we also have the patients use the muscle. Mm-hmm. And we listen to what happens when there is active movement of the muscle, because we can see and hear the motor units. And what we're looking to see is if there's too many, too few, too big, too small. And again, gives us information all the way up into the neck, but that's what will let us know, number one, if there's abnormal spontaneous activity, that there's ongoing nerve damage, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a very important thing, especially for surgeons trying to decide, hey, should we do surgery in this situation? Say, for example, someone had a radiculopathy and they had surgery 3 months prior, but they're just not getting better. Well, it could be, number one, that there's still pressure on that nerve that's causing a problem, or it could be they took the pressure off the nerve and it just needs time to heal, because as you probably know, nerves regrow really slowly. It mm-hmm. takes about an inch a month. So if you think about how long it takes to get down to the hand, it can be, that's where we say it could be a year or two before we see the full improvement. But if there is ongoing nerve damage, you don't want to wait a year or two. And so that's where the surgeons may say, hey, let's see what the EMG shows. Is there ongoing nerve damage at this point? Or is this chronic, meaning there isn't active nerve damage? And then we would do more conservative stuff, injections, therapy, giving it time.
Yeah. All right. So going back to this patient who had the EMG for carpal tunnel, what happens after that?
So number one, if we have confirmed that the diagnosis is carpal tunnel, it depends who sent them. So a lot of times people start with an orthopedic surgeon or a neurosurgeon, and they just want to see, hey, is this carpal tunnel? Is it a pinched nerve at the elbow? Is it even something coming from the neck? So to confirm the diagnosis, but then also to look at severity, because if things are mild, then generally we will go more a conservative route, physical therapy, bracing, try to protect the nerve by not, you know, setting the wrists on hard surfaces. Mm-hmm. You can use the jelly pads if there's a lot of typing. If things are more in the moderate to severe category, that lets us know, all right, there is ongoing nerve damage. So it's a situation where we would want to consider loosening up the tissue there to give the nerve some room to breathe. And obviously symptoms play a big role too. If the EMG shows that there's only mild findings on the EMG, but someone has tried all those modalities and they really can't take the symptoms, then surgery becomes a consideration. But in general, it's a very helpful piece to determine what direction to go.
When the patient comes in, are they usually scared? Like, what do you say to them to calm them down?
Well, there certainly are patients that have either heard from someone or read online how uncomfortable the test was. And yeah, as you know, generally people don't go online to say, oh, it was fine, it was no big deal. It's the people who, you know, have a nightmare story. So I guess I would say in general, you know, patients should know that most people tolerate the procedure just fine. You know, the first part where we send the impulses, at worst, it feels like if you walk on carpet and touch a doorknob, get a little zap. And then with a little acupuncture-sized electrode, may feel a little pinch, but not much more than that. And the other question that a lot of people ask or are worried about is, oh, well, if you're sending electrical impulses, is that bad? And it's important for them to know that, you know, we send electrical impulses to make things happen. Mm-hmm. As you know, with the brain, is, you know, electrical impulses is a major thing going on. But with the peripheral nervous system, if I tried to move this muscle, I send that information from the brain down the spinal cord, out the nerves and into the muscle. When I do the nerve conduction study, I'm just jumping in right at these spots, but sending the same kind of impulse. And so there's nothing unique or worrisome about that.
You're just basically mimicking what the brain is already doing from one spot to the other.
Exactly.
And maybe turning it up just a little bit in case that you have to have a clear picture of how bad that neuron is.
Yes, we do have to maximize what the nerve is able to do. And that's where being in the right spot is very important. If you're not near the nerve, then you would have to give a larger stimulus. But if you're in the right spot, you do want to maximize what the nerve is able to do so that you can see how fast and how strong the nerve is bringing the information. But really, the reason why it's uncomfortable is just because you have to go through the skin to get to the nerve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so they're diagnosed, physical therapy or resting is not helping. What is the next move medications?
So it depends on the problem. We talked about neuropathies. If it's a small fiber neuropathy that's just affecting sensation, like bringing in pain and temperature, if they're mild symptoms, people don't necessarily need to do anything. But the major thing we would do is look to see if there's a potential cause. And generally, that's blood work, looking for borderline or high blood sugars, vitamin deficiencies like B12, and talking about lifestyle modifications, because we know alcohol is a very common mm-hmm. cause of her neuropathy, and looking at if any medications could be causing it. If the symptoms are severe, which they can be, people can be uncomfortable, there are medicines that they don't do anything about the underlying problem. They work up in the brain where we process the pain sensation, like gabapentin or Neurontin or Lyrica or some of the antidepressants like Cymbalta. And those can be pretty helpful for those symptoms if people need those. Now, if it's more of a rapidly progressive neuropathy like Guillain-Barré, it's very different direction. That's why it is important to tease those out, because those do need treatment and sometimes need to be hospitalized if people are getting significantly weak or if they're having any trouble breathing. And so the most common treatment for that is IVIG, an infusion to essentially quiet down the immune system, because our understanding is it's an autoimmune response, mm-hmm. meaning the body is attacking itself. And so we want to quiet that down. And generally with support, people will go in the right direction as far as those goes. They're worse in the short term because they can progress faster. But if with treatment, they'll often go in the right direction, whereas the more common small fiber neuropathies, they worsen very slowly. But unfortunately, even though there's tons of research going on, we don't have a lot in the way of medicines for those.
Dude, listen, I appreciate this so much. You know, for talking about it on the patient side, for talking about it on the student side later, a little bit more clinical. I didn't know how great this conversation was going to go. And you're such an interesting guy that I knew if we're going to talk about EMGs, which I have no clue about, you're the guy to do it with your expertise and just a good guy. So I want to say thank you. Let's have you in again. You know, maybe we'll have some examples up on the board, get into some patterns or something like that, if that sounds good to you.
I would absolutely love to. We can delve deeper into any of these issues. And again, I really appreciate you organizing all of this and educating the people, because it's great both for the patients or anyone who is going along this path in their professional career. So thanks so much for doing it.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And thank you for tuning in.